everybody, and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast after testing edition. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Tommy. Welcome to Katie. Welcome to Frank, the dog, who is sat on Tommy's lap from the beginning of this podcast. Just in case you're wondering what that furry thing was on the founder, WTF1 founder, sorry, his lap. Welcome. Of course, wearing your fluorescent sort of orangey vibe jumper as well, really going on that McLaren, Max hype train.
McLaren or Max, let you decide. We all know what it is. Max,
come on. But with a Max cape behind you, yeah.
Yeah, true. The guitar's retired now after testing.
And Katie, the WTF1 author, you've gone for more neutral colours today. You're not particularly supporting anyone?
No, I have pink nails. Maybe that's to do with Alpine or something. I don't know.
Potentially. Yeah. But only for the first two races of the season.
Yeah. Like,
properly. Anyway, we are going to basically run you through questions that you had from F1 testing, shakedown, whatever it was. But first, before we do that, we actually have had our final car launch of the year. And it's come from Alfa Romeo, who for whatever reason decided, you know what? Hey, guys, right, let's schedule this. When should be a really good time that everybody's going to tune in? Okay, Sunday at 8 a.m. Well, at least for UK audience. I'm sure there are thinking around different areas of the world, in Guangzhou, of course. But that doesn't help us.
Yeah, other time zones exist. But what I will say is it was definitely the least hyped. Obviously, it's easy for us to say with a very European-based audience, but obviously my Twitter, I was up Sunday morning an 8 a.m. car reveal, and there was just no one on Twitter was talking about it. And I think a lot of it as well, obviously, you know, even if it had been Monday or whatever, the fact that it was a Sunday as well, a lot of journalists and people in the media, including us, were absolutely shattered from 3 days of F1 testing and wanted a little weekend to sort of recharge our batteries. And then they were just like, 8 a.m. And then they just dropped the pictures half an hour before they were going to do a press conference, which was even more of a surprise. So it was all a bit like, what? I think we got the pictures out before Alfa Romeo. That's how like sort of strangely organized it was.
Clearly someone at Alfa Romeo has gone, I want to go back to bed. So here's your pictures. Do with them what you will. But yeah, anyway, over to the car. Although, I still don't understand why Sunday was the day. Why not Monday? Why not just wait a day? Anyway, the actual car itself, pretty juicy. I think the main talking point out of that was the personalized wheel covers. Now that looked very nice indeed going out. A lot of people likening it to a Pokemon ball, which I found quite funny. But generally speaking, it's a solid looking car. I think it's a nice sort of, it's a new feel, but it also looks nice. And I'm a big fan of it. So I think I gave the Alfa an 8.5 out of 10. So I was a big fan.
Yeah, they're getting bonus points for the wheel covers. It was cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really nice. I've given them a 9 out of 10 because I just really like the livery because it's just so simple. Like, I've always enjoyed the like white and the burgundy colours that they've got going on, but they've jazzed it up a little bit more this year, a bit more of retro vibes. And yeah, I really love it. But yeah, the wheel covers did definitely boost it up higher. It's cool.
One thing, Tommy, what was your out of 10?
I'd probably give it an 8. I give it it definitely got more bonus points for the wheel covers because they are the only team I've seen that made them look good and done something cool with them, whereas everyone else has tried to hide them, just paint them black and pretend they don't exist, whereas Alfa have gone, you know what, Pokeballs. And actually one thing that's quite funny is they put a video up of their car coming out the pits, and when it's at slow speed the white really stands out and it looks like a loading bar because it's spinning around. It looks quite funny. But yeah, it was quite cool. I like it.
And that was actually the question from Bernard Spiteri. So I apologize for jumping the gun on that one. But we have given all our ratings now. And it was, an overall positive opinion, wasn't it, of the Alfa Romeo? Can't really
be
said.
And it didn't get leaked. So
it didn't. Well, they just gave out the pictures just randomly half an hour before for everybody else in media. But same that probably can't be said in terms of positivity regarding their actual tests, which is what we'll get on to. Well, whilst we now move to those 3 days of glorious testing that we watched every minute of, didn't we? It was great, you know.
Our testing, shakedown.
Oh, sorry, no, it wasn't even shakedown. What was it? What was the official terminology?
I can't remember because they literally wrote F1 testing on the timing.
I know, which is insane, isn't it? But that's because they probably couldn't fit F1 shakedown. They could have just put shakedown, but then that maybe didn't make sense.
F1
either way,
do.
They didn't really know what they were doing, did they, with regards to labeling it and whatnot, and trying to hide the fact that clearly there was something at play here that they don't want us all to talk about, whether that's money exchanging, we don't know, but they've never fully confirmed that. But as for testing, we'll call it testing because otherwise it gets very, very confusing. We, of course, were doing our live stream. So thank you, everybody, for tuning into that. If you joined any part of the 24 hours we did over the 3 days, my voice was very much on the ropes by the end of that. I actually went out for dinner that evening and could feel my voice just about giving way when I was just talking. And I was like, oh, no, this is it. My voice is gone. But thank you, everybody, for joining that. It really was an awesome thing to bring you. And we will be doing similar sort of stuff for testing coming up in a couple of weeks. But we will confirm exactly what we're doing for that very soon. So let's reflect. The Anna Cox asks, if teams can't find a solution to the porpoising that fits in the 2022 regs, will the FIA change the regs accordingly? Now, porpoising, for those that maybe haven't kept up to date with the testing, that's fair enough.
Not watched our video, huh?
It hasn't been, yeah, maybe not that, or maybe they just didn't watch any of the Weight Nothing on TV, so therefore just ignored it. But porpoising was in a very basic terms, the cars were bouncing up and down on the straight due to the ground effect, the philosophy that they've got on the cars now. So it just kept basically, yeah, bobbing up and down. You would have seen Formula One, I'm sure, posting some videos, especially Charles Leclerc bouncing down the straight and causing some serious issues with that. And of course, that's the thing that teams need to fix. It's not something that's ideal for them. And the question about Anna Cox, there are solutions from what Formula One teams have said. You know, there are setup changes they can make, etc. But it's about fixing it to a degree in which it doesn't lose them a huge amount of time. I think we saw Williams had holes in their side pods where they were basically trying to fix that solution where they could, yeah, that the airflow was better spread out. I'm getting very aerodynamical here. That's a word. that's, that definitely does not exist. But yeah, there are fixes from my understanding of what the teams have said. There are obviously fixes that the FIA could bring in as well, like active suspension and things like that, that George Russell, I think, has come out recently and said that is something that, you know, could potentially fix the porpoising problem. So there are definitely solutions. I feel like the FIA will just say, fix your cars. We're not changing anything.
And so they should. Yeah. If you've got a problem, deal with it. These are the rules. You make a car based on the rules. And yeah, I don't see why the FIA should step in. Some teams haven't got, you know, like, it's not fair on the teams that have, one, sorted it, and two, you know, it's up to them to make their cars work in that way. And you can complain about safety issues all you want, then like change your car and fix it then. Because, yeah, for me, I think it's actually, I heard that McLaren maybe don't even have any problems at all with it, which is quite strange. And Ferrari fixed it already. So
yeah, McLaren
Ferrari master plan underway already.
and McLaren didn't understand why they didn't have the problem as well, which just kind of shows how difficult this is to kind of figure out in the simulations.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't want to see like the teams just be like, oh no, our car's really good, but we've got this issue. So please change the rules to make, No, I don't want that personally. I don't think they should do that.
It is unusual that none of the teams seem to pick up on this when they were trialing their car, testing it, putting it in the wind tunnels, whatever it might have been. But I mean, porpoising isn't a new phenomenon. Like, it's something that has been a part of Formula One with these ground effect cars previously. The phrase was coined by Mario Andretti when he did a test of the Lotus 80 in Silverstone, I learned over the weekend. And that was a ground effect car. So it's not exactly like it's a brand new thing that's just been discovered. Like, it's got history behind it. So we'll have to see what happens. But yeah, by looking at the drivers in the cars, like you say, they're bobbing up and down. They look like like a roller coaster, but they look like one of those little bobbleheads that you put, you know, like on your car or whatever, and they bobble away. But yeah, we'll have to see what happens, because some drivers like George Russell said that it could be safety concerns. Other drivers like Bottas have said, nah, it's fine. Like, just, it'll be fine. Just pipe down. But it is a thing that we've seen, like an Imola a few years ago. It wasn't down to porpoising, but Kevin Magnussen had an issue with his gearbox which meant that every time he upshifted, he smacked his head on the back of the car. And he ended up having to retire because he got such a bad migraine when he had this this issue with his car. And if we see that consistently happen with the guys in the cars, you know, having to have their head bobble and things like that, it's going to be incredibly uncomfortable. And it might be that some of these drivers, if they can't sort it, I mean, we might see some retirements from drivers just feeling so like nauseous or got such a bad headache. But hopefully during these few weeks we've got before Bahrain testing and then the first race of the season, the teams will probably be doing everything they can to try and sort it out.
Imagine when we get the, you know, the like wiki pages when it says like retirements and you've got like 10 drivers and it just says headache from the first, the reason for retirement.
Yeah, I guess the porpoising could maybe vary as well, depending on which track we go to. That's another thing that they can't test, really. You know, of course, we're going to have Bahrain and we're going to have Spain in terms of pre-season testing, but you know, they can't test the entire calendar to see where porpoising potentially is better or worse. I can't see it being as bad as retiring drivers, because, I mean, they did many, many laps over the last 3 days. You know, Verstappen did 140 or whatever it was in one day. So clearly there's, you know, there is room for the drivers to work around it. But at the same time, the Formula One cars won't be allowed to race like that. It'll be like, you know, they're all racing on a bouncy car. So I genuinely don't think Formula One would allow that to happen. And they'll tell the teams to fix it to a certain parameter. And, you know, if the car bounces more than a certain amount, it's probably going to be deemed unsafe. Funny that George Russell's saying like, oh, you know, it's going to be unsafe. Maybe that's because Mercedes are struggling very much to figure out why their car does it. And they want it to be, you know, they want teams to be given a helping hand. There's plenty of politics at play with Formula One teams and how, you know, Bottas is like, ah, it's fine, mate. You know, it's because Alfa, like, yeah, don't worry, we'll sort it. Plenty of stuff that teams will try and do to get the FIA on side for their car. Next question, Ross Bella 16 asks, do you think reliability will play a big part in the championship with it being the first year of a new set of regulations? A lot of teams seem to be struggling with problems in the first testing session. It's a good question. I don't think reliability is going to play near as much a part as maybe some people are expecting. You know, you compare it to the new set of regulations back in 2014, but that was very much the changes of the engine. You know, these are, you know, majorly around the aerodynamic side of things, which I think teams are just trying to get their head around. They're just trying to understand why the car's reacting the way it is. You know, they can test certain things in the wind tunnel, but when you actually get out on track, that's when you fully understand what your car's capable of. So I think it's just merely ironing out these little issues. I think by the time we actually get to round one and see that, you know, see the calendar year, that's when, you know, teams will have probably worked it out. Maybe in the first few races, there might be a few, but I don't see it being a problem throughout the season though.
Now, I was very pleasantly surprised at the reliability we saw in the shakedown slash test slash whatever you want to call it, because there were rumours that the shakedown was being kept behind closed doors because they were worried these cars were going to make it 6 foot out the pit lane and then come to a halt and all this sort of stuff. But we saw our first red flag like a day and a bit into the shakedown. We didn't have a single red flag, a single stoppage on the first day. The first person to have an issue was for Sergio Perez, who had a gearbox issue. And although there are a few little hydraulics issues here and there, I say a few little, Alonso had a hydraulics issue, which then set his car on fire on Thursday. So not such a small problem, but generally there wasn't anything that I would call alarming. I think it was just a few little things here and there. But I don't think, famous last words, that this whole new shakeup is going to be affecting the reliability as much, because as you mentioned, the last time we had a really big shakeup was the changes to the power units. And obviously that's a lot more of an internal thing. And there's maybe, is it fair to say, a lot more that can go wrong inside that power unit than on the outside of a car? So I think
actually,
we're going
if
to
you're
be
McLaren
okay.
Honda.
Yes.
Yeah. I was surprised actually that people were so caught up with the reliability thing, because yeah, a lot of the reliability issues come from the inner workings of a car, not how it looks on the outside. And obviously, you know, unless the new look aero, I guess porpoising was the main thing that was, I guess, a concern with the new aero, but unless, you know, front wings are falling off because of the shape of them and stuff, you're not going to get reliability issues. It's still going to be gearbox engine. So
I probably say on that, that obviously, you know, with the aerodynamic side of things and maybe ground effects and starting to learn that whole concept again is the aspects of overheating as well and things like that, where they try and risk certain areas and then they're not getting, because we saw, didn't we, a few different cars testing different cooling solutions. So maybe that's another small factor as well.
Yeah, and side pods has been another thing where teams would have no side pods if they could, I imagine, if they could cool the car. So it's not as extreme as 2014 when you had a V8 normal V8 engine and then went to a very complicated V6 turbo hybrid, and then that was when we saw that teams managed 10 laps or whatever. They've done all right. There's not been any huge amounts. And we saw, as soon as we said that on our testing stream, that's when everyone started breaking down and going off because we jinxed that hard. Yeah,
five red flags in one session. Yeah. And I wasn't there, so I'm blaming you guys.
Yeah, we did. We 100% did. I was even talking about how I want to see Alonso do really well, and that's when his fire started.
You may think you know Harry's, but it's way more than just a super sharp razor company. They're here to revamp your whole routine, from close shaves and flake-free hair, all the way to clear, healthy skin. Harry's helps guys feel good. Harry's offering a free travel-size shower gel with a trial set to you, our WTF1 listeners, to give you a chance to try other products as well as shave. So what is in the trial set? Well, there's an expertly engineered weighted handle, 1 5-blade cartridge, a handy foaming shave gel for effective lubrication, travel blade cover for life's adventures, and a free shower gel just for you. Harry's shower gels, face wash, and skincare products can be added to shave plans anytime, anywhere. Why not give your own shower shave a go by redeeming a free Harry's trial set? All you cover is £3.95 for delivery. Just go to harrys.com/WTF1 to have your set delivered and start a shave plan. Your freebie will be added at checkout. That's harrys.com/WTF1. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Relationships take work. A lot of us will drop anything to go help someone we care about. We'll go out of our way to treat other people well, but how often do we give ourselves the same treatment? BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and WTF1 listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/WTF1. That's BetterHelp.com/WTF1.
Right. Next question. I feel like you've definitely baited me with this name, Tommy, because I'm absolutely Magnum Lauda. How much do you believe these new tyres are going to play a part in 2022?
Sorry, I genuinely didn't check that name.
How much do you believe these new tyres are going to play a part in 2022? Mario Isola from Pirelli has said the new philosophy is for less deg and overheating, allowing drivers and teams to push more. Tyres can make or break a season regarding entertainment. What are your thoughts? Well, less deg. And I guess it's more kind of going down the route of, if that is the case, more go down the route of what we saw many years ago with Bridgestones, where they could go and attack for much more. And I guess it does work if the cars can overtake. If the cars can follow and they can be constantly pushing, it will work. But if not, something that we rely on is tyres degrading in order to give us overtakes. So it really does lean on whether the 2022 F1 cars can follow, can provide us with overtaking. Because if that's the case, then we'll see a lot more battling, because then they'll be able to actually push and continue to push, even if they've just been overtaken. So it's very much relying on the combination. If one's right and one's wrong, it's not going to work. They both need to be on the same level. Because if the cars can't overtake, then you need tyres that do degrade. If the cars can, then it's fine to have less degrading tyres. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, but we're not really going to find out until we get racing.
Yeah, this is my biggest concern with the new rules, I guess, that if we have these bulletproof Pirellis, that it kind of hurts the strategy side of it, where, you know, even if the cars, I'd argue that even if the cars are really good at overtaking and can pass and can run a lot closer, you'd argue, you know, in a race where, let's say, the best team are Mercedes, then Ferrari, then Red Bull or whatever, they'll all qualify in the front row of the grid, the slower teams at the back. Where's the overtaking coming from? Because the fast cars are...
tire rule as well, gone.
Yeah. So, like, they're all going to... Yeah, will the strategy change in that sense? Because if we're just doomed to a one stop and everyone starts on the same tyres, hopefully not, because of, yeah, you say the Q2 tyre rule. But I really hope we don't see that strategy side go, because even if the cars can overtake and can follow a lot better, you know, I'm trying to think. Say like Sebastian Vettel being fifth behind Max Verstappen, who's fourth, the Red Bull's the faster car. Vettel can't overtake because he's in a slower car. It doesn't matter if they can follow each other better. Like what we relied on in the past to get good racing and strategy, if you think of, like, particularly a lot of the Hamilton versus Verstappen battles when they couldn't race, is one would switch to a two-stop and one stop and you'd be on that threshold. And it would be about tyre management, and then you'd see a really fascinating strategy race, and that's how you relied on passing and overtaking and that side. So that does concern me, that even if they do fix this rule and the cars are incredible and can drive close behind, fastest car starting at the front, slowest car starting at the back in a one-stop race, I don't want them to just be within half a second of each other and just do the whole race and go, this is much better because they're a little bit closer. You want to see passing.
I guess just one more thing from me is that, I guess on the flip side, I don't want to be fully negative on the way that which they're going in terms of the new philosophy, but I guess the problem with this, and I'm not saying it's, you know, that we don't see any mistakes, but the problem with these current tires that we have had is that they're constantly just preserving them. They're making, you know, especially in the likes of Monaco and places you can't overtake, they are always preserving the tires. So they're never at 100% capacity of pushing. Whereas this, if they genuinely can push, that opens the door for more mistakes. So I think that's maybe where we then see some better racing, if the tires are less degrading, less overheating, but we see them properly going for it. You know, back in the old day, in, you know, the noughties, where the drivers would genuinely be absolutely shattered going up to the podium, that's where I think we see more mistakes creep in and potentially better racing that way.
So what you're telling me is Monaco is going to be a banger. Cool. Thanks. Good to hear. Good to know.
Obviously, they could run around the track and still be rubbish.
No, I think it's been something that alarm bells have been ringing with tyre strategy and stuff for 2022. I think we were extremely lucky last year, as Tommy mentioned, with some of the Hamilton Verstappen strategy calls. It was fascinating. It was such an important and integral part of how the season ended up unfolding. But yeah, Mario Isola. Sorry, I don't know which one it is. Isola. Oh, the third option. but he has made it quite... like known that it's going to be a mix of one stop and two stop strategies, but most likely probably going to be one stop strategies. So yeah, he said it's true that with a new product and less degradation, it is possible we have less pit stops, so we will have the majority of the races on a one stop. And to me, yeah, that's concerning, because scrapping the Q2 tyre rule could actually make this whole scenario even worse, because I know Tommy is thinking, what, getting rid of the Q2 tyre rule is actually gonna, could be a bad thing. But I just have visions of everybody lining up on the grid, like everyone on softs, and then to go lap 13, everyone's gonna pit for hards and that's it. That's gonna be the strategy. I'm sure there'll be a few anomalies in there. But yeah, I just am worried that we're gonna see like just one stops and that's kind of it. And I really am getting into the strategy side of things. Beforehand, you know, I was so much about the racing on track, but as times have changed and I've got more into like the rules and that kind of side of thing, and maybe last year teams were a bit braver with some of their strategy calls because there was much more on the line for it, I found it such an interesting part of the weekend. So I'll be properly upset if that has to sort of go, because everyone's just going to go for a one stop and that's it.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think another thing to throw in, if they, you know, if there is this problem, which it very possibly could be, there's a way maybe that if they want it to have less deg and over less overheating, then they could have it so that the gaps between the tires are bigger. So there's that, you know, the soft tire is absolutely rapid, but does only last a certain amount of laps than the mediums, you know. So like if there is a bigger, because we in some tracks, you know, the medium and the hard haven't had a huge amount of difference between them in terms of pace difference. I think if we'd had that bigger window, maybe that's how we kind of open up the racing a bit more, because yeah, that there are solutions, I think, but
make them use all three ones. Easy, done.
There you go.
I still just think that's the perfect two stop solution, that you make them use all three, and then you'll get, you're guaranteed different strategies.
Well, they can use all five. Bring all five compounds.
Back to four-stop Pirelli era.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah. I mean, I know logistically it's not ideal to take all five compounds.
We want to cut down our emissions. That'd be banging. We're also going to send...
That'd be amazing.
Three. But also, it is funny you mentioned that side of it, that, you know, they bin off all the old soft tires that no one wants. Like, use them in the race. Mm. And then teams have to use it. And just because the computer says they're the worst tire doesn't mean they can just throw them out the window and go, no, we're not using that. Some teams might want to, you know, try something new or use them for two laps and then come in the pits again. So that's when you get exciting tire strategy. So why they've not done that, I don't know yet, but I'm going to keep mentioning it like the Q2 tire rule until they do it.
Okay. Tommy knows that this is the podcast. Their hub of information is right here. Yeah. Next question. Actually, no, this is more just kind of a funny statement, to be honest. Spinala 44 says, are the back markers actually going to catch up? That's it. No question. Literally just, are they going to catch up? The answer is TBC. Haas look like they maybe aren't 5 seconds off the pace this year, but then look, we haven't seen pace at all, really. We might see it on the final day of testing in Bahrain. In terms of mileage, Haas and Alfa Romeo were the bottom two from what I can remember in the tally. So not the best start, but we don't know. I mean, you say backmarkers, Haas were the backmarker. There wasn't anyone really in their realm in 2021. They were very much in F2. So I would like to think they're going to catch up, but I am now much less hopeful that they're going to be a midfield team than potentially they were kind of saying with how much time they'd spent trying to fix their car for 22.
Yeah, I feel Williams have shown great signs of progression, but that's the result of years of hard work. And obviously, Mercedes have increased their technical partnership with Williams for this year as well going forward. But yeah, I fear for the Ferrari power unit customers, because Ferrari, in my opinion, seem to be quite selfish. They're like very much Team Ferrari.
You better be careful. Don't you be setting off Ferrari too much, right? I'll allow one. That's it.
Allow one. Okay. But yeah, I fear that we're going to see both their customers, their teams struggle a bit this year with Alfa Romeo and Haas. I think they're probably going to be the ones at the back. And it might be great if Ferrari go in and win the Constructors' Championship. Are they really going to care that they've got two of their customer teams struggling at the back? Probably not. So I don't know. I feel like Ferrari need to share the love a little bit more. I know that they've distributed some of the Ferrari team to Haas to help with budget cuts. And, you know, Haas have now got a location in Maranello, near Maranello. So maybe things will improve for this year. But yeah, I've got a feeling that both of the customer teams are going to be at the back.
It's hilarious how everyone thought, yeah, the rules turn on its head. Everyone will be closer. And
hold on, we don't know yet.
It's still testing. It's still
I'm
testing.
I'm just a massive pessimist.
In terms of like the order, there's definitely, it's not as extreme as a 2009 situation where it doesn't look like an Alpine, or, you know, like even Aston Martin are like, yeah, we hope to do a little bit better. And then I heard Alpine after, you know, them sort of mentioning El Plan, you know, we're going to be the top team, Alonso, to fight for a title. And then they're like, our target is fifth in the constructors' title again. It's a bit like, oh, so you were all like, yeah, 2020 regs, this is our chance. And then gone, actually, it's probably going to be roughly the same. Sorry, 2022 regulations is the same. In terms of back markers, yeah, they might be a little closer, but still very much looks like Haas now for a bear at the back. And then as for the front, it is a little bit more potentially, like, you've got Ferrari and McLaren seem to be the two teams that have done quite well. But I'll say it now, I will be absolutely flabbergasted if the top four in the constructors' title, in fact, if the top four in the constructors' title are any different in any order other than Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari, and McLaren, if they're not the top four in the constructors' title, whoever gets in that top four, I will buy a bunch of merchandise from them and I will wear it in the podcast for the final race and apologize.
Okay.
There's absolutely no way that's happening.
Jesus. Okay.
One merch is expensive.
Wow.
I know. I just bankrupt myself, especially with Aston Martin.
I'm going to go against that. And I will say that there will be a different constructor in that top four.
Okay.
And that, you know, if that isn't the case, I will buy some Ferrari merch. Right. There you go.
Yeah. There's me hoping. I really hope it's AlphaTauri and I'll buy a load of Yuki merch.
I'm just going to sit and be quiet. I've made too many bets on this podcast. Well,
you've already got your bet of tattoo Fernando. To be fair, if you get the tattoo of Fernando Alonso, Tommy's going to have to buy Alpine merch because there's no way for Fernando winning the world title without Alpine getting top four. And if they do, if they don't, that is a shocking team performance from Ocon. Right, moving on. I think we've covered that the backmarkers probably aren't going to catch up to the degree of anyone really being shocked. Tebow_micro says, going through all red flags and if they were driver error or technical failing, and which would be a worse sign for 2022 racing? First impressions of Zhou on track? I assume Tebow just meant he's going through all of them and he didn't want us to go through all of them. There were five.
You can go through them all.
I mean, if you have that information,
Katie,
I'm more than happy to go through that. And Colin, off you go.
Okay, so Sergio Perez had a gearbox issue on Thursday morning.
Yeah, Rebel washed.
Nikita Mazepin had a damaged fuel pump, which was obviously a car issue, also on Thursday morning. Fernando Alonso had a hydraulics issue with his car on Friday morning, which meant they were out of action for the rest of the day. Pierre Gasly, he was probably the first one to actually have something with driver error. I think it was a crash, and he sort of diffed up his front wing. Guan Yu Zhou had a spin, which put him in the gravel, and also a small hydraulic leak, which both caused like two pretty much consecutive red flags. And then Sebastian Vettel had an oil leak on his car on Friday as well. So
there you go. Nice summary. Thank you, Katie. Thank you for that information.
No drama.
Well, I think Perez probably came from Verstappen doing 400,000 laps the day before, to be honest. So there's that. But I mean, we said
games have started already.
Yeah, yeah. Verstappen's just like, I'm going to break this gearbox before Perez gets in it. Yeah, I'm sure that's not the case. But just for people that don't understand sarcasm or jokes in general, on Twitter, right? So I think in general, we spoke about the reliability, didn't we, at the top. I don't think it's anything crazy what's gone on. I think, obviously, Alfa Romeo had some pretty poor running in terms of, at least for Bottas's side, he did like 53 laps over 3 days, which is, you know, not enough for someone that's trying to get a handle of the new car. But generally speaking, obviously, it was a shame for Alpine to lose a whole day's running, but they'd had a great day's running before. Generally, it was just Alfa and Haas that needed a lot more miles considering their struggles from last year. And as for first impressions of Zhou on track, obviously, he made that mistake, but seemed all right, got a decent amount of mileage. There's not really much more you can say because we haven't seen him on track. We haven't really seen any onboards or how he drives the car. All we know is he had a spin, had a reliability issue. But, you know, most of all, he didn't bin the car. Zhou was all right.
Yeah. In terms of like Guan Yu Zhou, it's difficult because, yeah, we didn't see anything. We couldn't actually see any of the footage. And I feel like people are just so desperate for him to fail. I hope he proves a lot of people wrong because I feel like people are already sort of like trying to get the whole narrative of like, he's a rubbish pay driver. He crashes all the time. Like, I saw loads of people tweeting like, Guan Yu Zhou caused two red flags. And it's like, well, one of them was a mechanical issue, which is out of his fault. And yes, one of them was a mistake, but then also,
so
you know,
have a spin.
Like, yeah. Jesus. Pierre Gasly also, you know, like as Katie put it, biffed it into the wall. You know, they're pushing, you know, if he'd spun off 7 or 8 times in testing or whatever and kept crashing and whatever, then yeah, fair play to like roast him and say he's terrible. But just so far, can't really say until we get to to qualifying and he's doing everything he needs to do.
Yeah, so. He's just a young lad who's got his first F1 opportunity, and he's not exactly a terrible driver. We've seen him do really well in F2. Yes, he's in a competitive field, so there are others above him in the championship standings for F2. One of them, you know, won it last year, hasn't got a seat, and everybody is, you know, rightfully upset about that because the progression from F2 to F1, there's still not enough of it, in my opinion. But yeah, I'm really excited to see how Guan Yu Zhou gets on this year. And, you know, yes, he had a little spin, but big deal. Like, it's not like he's destroyed it and gone into the wall and the car's been written off for the whole 3 days. It was a little spin. He's pushing. He's trying to find the limits of the car. It's better that he does it now than in, you know, qualifying in Bahrain. So, yes, I'm looking forward to seeing him this year in F1.
Yeah. Good. A minor Katie rant there. Enjoyed it.
A little bit came up. I was like,
no,
suppress.
No. Don't suppress. But no, I think it's unfair to have a go at him just yet. Like, he's literally just gone into Formula One. It's completely different philosophy to anything he's ever driven, you know, ground effect, etc. Of course, a lot of the, you know, same for a lot of the drivers, but at least they have experience of being in Formula One, dealing with that pressure. I think if he continues to, you know, if he has crashes, you know, in the next test and, you know, into the season, that's when criticism can obviously be warranted. But your first spin, like, come on, chill out. Like, there's, if it like completely destroyed the car, as you say, Katie, then again, we can go, right, well, obviously you've been pushing too hard. That's not what you need to do. But a spin causing a red flag, getting your car back to the pits, whoop-dee-doo. Next question. Jant G. Beton says, or asks, which team impressed you the most so far? Ferrari. Tommy knew that was coming. He was literally smiling before I'd even said anything. But genuinely, obviously the most mileage was completed by Ferrari. Most mileage was done by Sainz, I think, as well, in terms of driver. And they just looked pretty bulletproof in that first test. And not much more you can really say. I was very much, you know, conducting the Ferrari hype train from the get-go. And we're very much off the, you know, off the platform, and we're moving steadily towards the next test. Other teams, obviously Mercedes, were looking strong as well in terms of their mileage. Obviously, it's difficult. You can't say impressed in terms of times because, you know, there's plenty of not pushing going on. But you have to just judge it on the mileage. And, you know, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, all looking
McLaren as well.
Good.
I think it's a great McLaren. Shout.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not really much more to elaborate on that apart from those top four that we're referring to them as now. I think they've all looked really, really strong. So.
Yeah, for me, Ferrari were most impressive, but we wait to see. And I guess, yeah, for me, it's Ferrari, maybe followed by McLaren in terms of them being closer to it. But as Lando said, you know, he was annoyed by being first because he didn't want the hype. The only rumor, like, I don't know how much truth there is into this, but there's obviously a lot of talk, and there always is, of, like, you know, Mercedes haven't even bought their real car yet and stuff. So it'd be interesting to see next test, especially because we can actually
get to see the next test
full stop. Yeah, exactly. How they do on track. And I think we'll get a lot more of an indication after the final day in Bahrain where we're at than we are here. But if I had to pick one, I'd say Ferrari as well.
Good lad. Your check is in the post.
Thank you.
Lovely stuff. Right, that is it. We are done here for this podcast. On Friday, we're going to be predicting the Constructors' Championship order from 10th to 1st. So make sure you join us for that episode.
From Haas to Mercedes.
Yeah, I was going to say, from 10th to 5th, because, well, you know what Tommy's is for the first. But no, look forward to that a little bit later this week. Make sure you give us 5 stars on podcast apps. Give us a like. Comment if you really had great fun, and also it's your last chance to vote for us in the Sports Podcast Awards as well. So there'll be a link in the description, I imagine, or in the comments or somewhere around there where you can go and break their website for the 17th time. So that is good stuff. Final thoughts, Tommy? You thought I was signing that straight?
No, I forgot. Final thoughts, I'm looking forward to seeing some on-track action in Bahrain, and hope you enjoyed as much as we could do with what we had in providing you the updates. So you at least know a little bit, even though in this podcast we've just gone, we don't know.
At least we're honest.
Yeah.
Katie, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Yeah. Just thank you to everybody that joined us at some point over the last 3 days, well, the 3 days of testing. It was genuinely a joy to interact and engage with you all for 24 whole hours. And yeah, ready to do it all again for Bahrain.
Yep. So news just in, but for the next test, we're doing a 72-hour non-stop live stream. You'll even see us going to sleep and just for the whole 3 days. That sound good, guys? Yeah.
Love it.
Not the case, no, but we will confirm what we're doing for that very soon. But yeah, thank you everybody for watching and listening. We'll see you soon for another video. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.